Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. Our guest this episode will bring us some new information about a way to take back our country from the globalist cabal. But before we get to him, I have some sad news that I wish to relate to you out there about a friend of mine. I was informed today my friend, Dennis Hunt, who is a humble man of God, husband, father, friend, and hero. Dennis was one of my heroes. He served in the U.S. Army Special Forces during Vietnam, and he was part of an elite unit that went across international boundaries in Laos and Cambodia called Military Assistance Command Vietnam Studies and Observations Group, otherwise known as MACV-SOG. He was a true warrior, a true friend, and this world is much sadder now that he is gone. His life was full, and unfortunately, the chemicals that we sprayed on Vietnam to defoliate it had side effects even to our guys, and Agent Orange caused the cancer that took his life. And so we want to honor him today, and it is with a sad heart that I bring this news to you, but he is with God, and I will see him again. Hallelujah. So, our guest this episode is John Lezoric. John is a father, teacher, engineer, farmer, and freedom fighter. He lives on a mountain farm, not only for survival, but to teach his children where everything comes from, how to see the law and providence of God in all things, and to connect emotionally to the whole of human history. John has learned fighting the sordid reality of the modern administrative state about what is and is not law, litigating several issues pro se all the way to the Supreme Court of West Virginia. In tactical civics, he believes he has rediscovered his country's founders' plan to restore and preserve human freedom under God's law. It is my pleasure to welcome John Lezoric to Civil Defense Radio. Hello, John. It's great to have you on the show.
Hello, Preston. Good morning. It's great to talk with you. I appreciate this opportunity.
Yes. I was introduced to tactical civics recently and attended a local meeting and found that this thing has real possibilities. I like the mission and the grassroots focus on bringing back the Constitution at the local level, which is where everything is anyways. You know, all politics are local. So we have to do our part locally to make sure that our little piece of the puzzle is operating correctly. So can you give us an overview of what you saw in this? Because obviously you're here talking to us about it. So you're one of the people that are authorized to speak. So give us some more insight, please.
Well, thank you, Preston. Tactical civics has been a real an eye-opener, a revelation to me. I found out about it about 3 years ago, and this is the way in which our republic was supposed to function. We have an absolutely unique situation in human history. We are the first society which is explicitly founded on the principle that all men have God-given rights and that we create government with the explicit purpose of securing them. Obviously, it doesn't feel that way today. So we did that amazing thing because of a couple of aspects of our heritage. We had the heritage of God's law, the Christian story. We had the experience of building our own new society without the support of any large institutions on this continent. So we had a culture that was a do-it-yourself culture in many respects. And law and order was something that we did ourselves also. Late 1700s, we put that all into law. So the simple way to look at tactical civics is that we established a government with the idea that its purpose was to secure our rights, and our founders constructed this system so that we ourselves, we the people, would directly superintend the government process. Over the first 100 years of our existence as a republic, we got comfortable and we got lazy and we stopped doing that. We were victimized by what amounted to a coup, a takeover by people who wanted to go back to the authoritarian and even the globalist imperial model of government. And as a society, we have not recovered. So tactical civics, we who put this thing together, it's been evolving for about 13 years. And we really feel we have been inspired by God to find in our history and in our founding documents the principles by which our system was supposed to work. Basically, all of the stuff that we see going wrong in our society now, in our country, and to an extent globally, where government acts as though it owns us, trespasses on our rights, pushes us around, because we in America, uniquely in human history, charged government with securing our rights. All of these trespasses are criminal activity. People like to talk about this as tyranny, but tyranny is something that an insane king does. And we don't have a king. We, the people, ordained this government for our own protection. So when the government acts in the opposite of that way, exploits us, oppresses us, pushes us around, does insane things, this is not tyranny, it's simply crime. Now, law enforcement is mentioned in our Constitution basically in only two places. Once where it says that no person shall be held to answer for an infamous crime but upon the indictment of a grand jury, and in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 15, where it says that it is militia that is to execute the law. Now, militia is a word that is very fraught today. The media and our government, if you want to call it that, has worked very hard to demonize the term, to give people an idea that this is, crazy vigilantes running through the woods waiting to shoot somebody. But the definition of militia that has been understood for 1,000 years has been the people of any community who are able to cooperate in the common defense. George Mason, signer of the Declaration of Independence, said militia is the whole people. So it is with ourselves that we left the task of enforcing all of the laws we made, all of the law we made by which we constructed a government which was intended to secure our rights. The militia, of course, well, central to the idea of government securing people's rights is the idea of due process, that no one can be presumed guilty, everyone must be presumed innocent, everyone who is suspected of a crime gets a fair trial. So the other 1,000-year-old law enforcement institution in our system that I mentioned before is the grand jury. Now, most people think of grand jury as some sort of an archaic holdover, as the lapdog of the judge and the prosecutor. Again, people are diseducated, I like to say, to think so, but the grand jury has a heritage 1,000 years old. It first appears in the tombs of King Ethelred in England in the year 997 AD. And grand jury, as recently as 1992, in a U.S. Supreme Court decision called U.S. versus Williams, Justice Scalia affirmed that the grand jury has essentially unlimited power to investigate anything going on in its jurisdiction, is not under the authority of any judge or any prosecutor. It is the duty and the authority of the grand jury to find out what's really going on And if they find probable cause to think a crime was committed, then they hand down an indictment. So given that, if you look at human history, just about wherever you look, historically, government is the most dangerous thing people have ever devised.
I'll agree with that.
Yes, when it runs amok, it is the largest criminal enterprise in the world. So we, the people, have the authority, if we will take it up, to investigate, determine what wrong is being done, and then hand out an indictment. It doesn't matter if it's a crooked sheriff or a school board member or a legislator or a governor. But the point of this is that people don't know that they have this power, so they don't exercise it. And what's more, if you, let's say you do have a grand jury that perceives that something is going wrong and they do their investigation, well, let's see, how are they going to do their investigation? Let's say they suspect that, the school board member that's misappropriating money or something, and they want the records out of the school board office. So they call down to the sheriff's office and they say, can you go bring us these records that we need to inspect? And the sheriff's son-in-law happens to be on the school board, and they don't seem to want to cooperate. The problem is that in many places, the criminals that have hijacked our government, they cooperate and they protect each other. And that's where militia comes in, because militia is we the people, not beholden to the system, responsible side by side with it and to it and under it, but not under its control. So the militia would then be able to execute the warrants issued by the grand jury. And the same would happen if the grand jury handed down an indictment of someone who was protected by the system. The militia would be able to do the arrest. And then, of course, all of this has to be according to due process, and all of this feeds into a fair trial where another ancient people's institution determines the final outcome, which is the petty jury. So what we have done, because no one understands this, and people have been diseducated to think that law enforcement is something that has to be done by paid professionals that are part of the system, the main task of Tactile Civics is education, is teaching people how our history coalesced in our law, which leaves we the people in control of our institution. And the way the process that we are using for this is we are starting county-based tactical civics chapters all over the country. We have active chapters in getting close to 300 counties around the country now. We have a couple of thousand people that are studying this stuff with us. And in every county, there needs to be a chapter to begin to educate the jury pool, to build support for the idea that we the people can take our republic back. And simultaneously, there are already militia groups in many places all over the country. Most of these are very responsible, well-led, public-spirited, public service-oriented groups. Maybe there are some that are not so good, but the ones that I've talked to, and I've talked to a lot of them over the past few years, know what they're about and are determined and diligent to be the good guys in their community. What most of them don't know is this duty, authority, and responsibility to execute the law. So we are working with existing groups that are willing to learn this. We are trying to find people to start and organize groups where they don't exist to work in partnership with paid law enforcement in their area, as long as the paid law enforcement is doing their job, to work in partnership with the Tactical Civics Chapter to continue to educate people. And let me back up a little bit. Obviously, there are, how do I get into this? So militia is basically we the people. It is basically the collective expression of the God-given right of individual and community self-defense. And that is the history of this institution, the militia, going back 1,000 years. It has a new character. It was given a new character when the Constitution was ratified, because it was explicitly charged with executing the law, but it was all under certain procedural constraints, if you want to call it that. The Constitution calls for Congress to arm and organize the militia and to lead such portion of it as is employed in the service of the United States. And it reserves to the state the authority to provide the training according to the discipline prescribed by Congress and to appoint the officers. Now, this hasn't happened in 150 years. Congress and the states are not only in complete neglect of their duty with regard to militia, but they're really actively opposing it. The other part of the Constitution, which tells us about the character that militia is supposed to have in our constitutional system, is in the Second Amendment that everybody loves to quote the second half of. the first half of which says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. So regulation is another fraught word. In the modern world, we think of the word regulation, we think of the, you know, the OSHA and the DEP and the EPA and the DOT, and we think, oh my God, regulation, to regulate means to sit on and to step on and to squash and to suppress. But that's not what regulation means at all. But the idea that regulation is inherently oppressive is what makes most militia people who are ardent for freedom, makes them angry when you mention that. But the way to understand the meaning of the word regulate in that context in the Constitution is to do the same thing for the word regulate that people do when they see a word in the Bible that they don't understand. The principle of Bible, first principle of Bible interpretation I was taught is, look for another place where you see the word, and it will teach you what the word means. Well, the word regulate or regulation,
that's good.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
The word regulate or regulation appears in two places in the Constitution. Once in the Second Amendment, where it says a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state. The other place it appears is in the clause which describes Congress's authority to coin money. It says Congress shall have the authority to coin money and regulate its value. So in the context of regulating the value of money, that cannot mean to suppress or to step on or to interfere with. All it can mean in the context of money is to make sure that money that is coined, gold and silver that is coined, is of a prescribed level of purity, and the coins weigh the right amount, that there's the right amount of gold and silver there. So to regulate in the context of money obviously means to cause to conform to an appropriate standard. In the case of money, it's the purity of the metal and how much is there. So if you look at regulate as meaning to cause to conform to an appropriate standard in the context of militia, then obviously to regulate is not to suppress, not to tell them to stay home, but it means to conform to an appropriate standard. So an appropriate standard would be to be well-armed, to be well-disciplined, to be ready to respond.
Okay, so how does that relate to a national or even a state or local militia standard? How because there isn't one.
Correct.
What would that look like? And for those chapters that have a militia, what standard should they be following?
Okay, tactical civics chapters don't have militias. Tactical civics does not create, does not run, does not organize militias. Tactical civics will teach militia groups how to operate under their duty and authority under the Constitution. And I actually wrote a little book about what you might call best practices for a constitutional militia, called American Militia 2.0, subtitled An American Militiaman's Handbook. You can get that on Amazon. You can get that for free on our website. But the specific protocols and training regimens and chains of command and so forth, traditionally, militia has been a locally based enterprise. It has been each community. It has always had a relationship with the local government. So, for instance, if there is a need that it must be called forth for, that can be done by by some level of government, depending on how it's organized. But I think I'm losing the focus of your question here. basically, we want to see militia organized on the county level, because traditionally that is the way it has been organized. Larger scale call-outs and musters have been called to respond to specific needs, and that certainly is still part of the responsibility of militia, to be available.
Well, a militia can be more than just a bunch of armed guys. They could be doing search and rescue operations and helping out during disasters and things like that. And it sounds like it's the element that is natural to civil defense, because civil defense is emergency preparedness, disaster preparedness. It's prepare, respond, and reconstitute. That it covers all aspects of disasters. And there's a an environment where there needs to be some type of militia / security element that needs to be ready to go into action if need be. One would be, protect businesses in the downtown business area from you know, rioters and things like that. So
right.
That sounds like it meshes very well with civil defense, which is a building block of family, neighborhood, and community. And it sounds like that's what this is all about: family, neighborhood, community.
Well, it does. We have to make a distinction between the expansive historical role of militia and the specific constitutional charges. The expansive historical role, of course, includes everything that you're talking about. You know, and a lot of existing groups, they run food banks, they do blood drives, they get kittens down out of trees, they you know, cut firewood for the widow, they do all kinds of wonderful stuff in the community. The specific charges that we and we have enormous respect for that, and that is how a militia acts organically as part of the community. That is how it holds the confidence and the trust and the respect and the gratitude of its community, and all of those things are vital. Tactical civics is narrowly focused on the idea of restoring the republic. So again, we're focusing on the constitutional charges, which are execute the law, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. But it's not far to look to find those crying needs today. You talk about rioting. Well, that would fall under the suppression of insurrections.
Yeah.
If you are in a border state where we have uncontrolled illegal immigration, that's an invasion which needs to be repelled.
Right.
And executing the law comes up every place there is a drug dealer who's paying off the local paid law enforcement, or everywhere there is a crooked sheriff, or everywhere there is a legislator who is voting for so-called laws that are unconstitutional. So to get back a little bit on to the track that we've been on, because the Constitution calls for an essential nexus between militia and government, which has not functionally existed now for a century and a half, what we have done is we have written a pair of ordinances which any county or independent city or town can pass. One of them is, it has a short title, Constitution Enforcement Militia Ordinance, and the other one is our grand jury ordinance. And what these ordinances do is they explicitly recognize the existence and the function of a militia group in the area, recognize it in its constitutional authority, recognize that it has the authority to execute the law, requires it to assist paid law enforcement wherever they are doing their job. It cites all of the law. We have a version customized for the laws of every state, and of course, all of them conforming to the Constitution. So we have the grand jury ordinance, and then we have the militia ordinance, and then we have the grand jury ordinance, which slightly streamlines the process for empaneling a grand jury, which guarantees the support of the local governing body when a petition is filed to empanel a grand jury. So what this does, the scenario that we look for is we plant a tactical civic chapter in the county, which starts to educate people, starts to raise awareness that law enforcement is the answer to our problems, which starts to teach people how it's supposed to work. Simultaneously, we have a militia group which already has or develops its relationship with the community, its station as the good guys. We like to think that a good militia group will have the same kind of reputation as a volunteer fire company. Well, they'll be the guys you call when you have a problem. Once we have built enough public support, we get the ordinances passed by county government or, like I say, independent city. And then everything is in place where everyone knows that we the people, ready to enforce the law again. But we don't suggest that if you're the only county in your state or in your region that successfully passed these ordinances, no, you're not going to go after the governor of your state right away, even if he's a crook.
Yeah, right.
Once you have a handful of counties, you know, half a dozen counties in the same area backing each other up, once you have increased public awareness, well, then you go after sheriff, God forbid, if he's a bad apple, or you go after the crook on the school board, or you go after the big drug dealer.
Right.
And when you start doing that, people start to see, oh my goodness, all of a sudden, this bad stuff, which we thought we could not do anything about, under the process and the prescription of the Constitution, we the people can do something about it. So you will get more counties that, you know, formerly were not interested, or their local county boards had their hand in the till and they didn't want to pass this ordinance. We'll replace some people in those county governments by the ordinary electoral process. and our program will spread. More and more counties will want to have constitutional law enforcement. Once this becomes a force in a given state, there will be a blizzard of resignations in the state legislature. The bad apples in the state legislature will say, oh my gosh, my gravy train is grinding to a halt. My jig is up. I'm going to get out while the getting is good. This will create openings for decent people who understand that public service is public service. It's not a license to steal. It will give opportunities for good people to repopulate the legislatures. At that point, we will be ready for what you might call the next phase of the Tactical Civics Plan. Everybody knows, and you know, if I'm running on, you can please interrupt me, but everybody knows that we have a Bill of Rights of 10 amendments to the Constitution. What a lot of people don't know is that 12 were originally proposed during the Constitutional Convention. The first amendment originally proposed was to guarantee that legislative districts never exceed 50,000 people. Now, it can be argued that this one actually passed. It should be part of the Bill of Rights now, but there was a clerical error in the copies that were sent out to the state legislatures. Connecticut got cold feet, and they passed it, but they never reported it back to the convention. It sat and sitting for 200 in the archive in Connecticut. So Tactical Civics has a plan. We call it our first right because it proposed amendment of the 12. We need 27 more state legislatures to ratify this. It will then become the 28th Amendment to the United States Constitution, and it will guarantee small congressional districts. Now, the significance of that is that currently congressional districts run from about 700,000 up to almost 1 million people. They are so large that the cost of running for these offices is enormous, and also essentially every legislative district is controlled by a major metropolitan area. And we all know that the morals and the values of the big cities are pretty well un-American. They're very different from what most of us believe in most of the country. So the whole Congress, by this process, is captured by the centralist, globalist, urbanist point of view. Once we have small districts, then we will truly have representation of what most of this country believes. Most of the area then even a populous county will have its own representative. This will change the character of the Congress so that it will more nearly reflect what are actually American values. Another thing that this will do is this will mean there'll be over 6,000 people in Congress instead of 535. Now, when I first heard this, I said, oh, crap, not more of a bad thing, but actually that's not the way it would work. Because in the first place, these people will be from the real America, not just from the urban concentrations. The second thing is 6,000 people will not fit in the Capitol building. So we have a piece of legislation already prepared, which we intend most of these new congressmen will campaign on, called the Bring Congress Home Act, which will say that Congress will no longer meet in D.C. Every congressman or woman or senator will have only one office in their home district, and Congress will meet by telepresence, the way you and I are talking, or the way people do Zoom conferences all the time now. What this will mean is that if you are a decent person with your own family or your own business, you want to be a public servant, you want to do your part, you want to run for Congress, but you don't want to abandon your family and your business and go live in the cesspool of D.C., you don't have to. It means that Congress will no longer be there in that city, you know, in the laps of the lobbyists being wined and dined and bribed 24/7. Mm-hmm. They will be at home in their little dinky office on Main Street where we, the people, can drop in on them at any time and look over their shoulder and see what they're doing. So these two things, the Bring Congress Home Act and the smaller district, will completely change the complexion of Congress. Instead of being mostly criminal careerists, it will be we the people again. It will be people who have an attachment and a loyalty to the people and the values of their hometown and are there to take care of necessary business rather than to build an empire.
That sounds great. But, you know, there's going to be those naysayers out there that, you know, they're going to poo-poo on everything, you know, but those are just minor stumbling blocks, as far as I'm concerned, in the grand scheme of things.
Well, this is why we start with law enforcement, because at the moment, government is at all levels captured. It is a self-serving entity. It is no longer realizes that it's supposed to be our servant. So that's why we have to start at the community level by cleaning house to where we have public servants again.
Yes. Yes. Well, we're running out of time. So can you give us any last statements to close up this section?
Sure. Well, there's one element that I haven't mentioned, and I won't go into it because it'll take a while. But it's called the indictment engine, and it is a device. It's a process by which every bill introduced gets tested for constitutionality, and if it's not, which most of them are not now, the person introducing it will have the opportunity to withdraw it, or a presentment will be filed with the grand jury in his home district, and he'll probably be indicted. That's because even though we have changed the structure to now encourage good people to populate the government at all levels, we're all human and we all need law enforcement looking over our shoulder to some extent. If you want to know more details, we have a website, www.tacticalcivics.com. We have extensive training materials. It's all available free. If you like the idea, you can join your chapter. We need people who want to return government to its rightful place as our servant. We need people to start chapters in every county. This is a new way of life. The essential problem that has put us in the dreadful situation we're in is laziness, is the fact that we want somebody else to do it.
Yes.
If you want somebody else to do it, pretty soon you are a sheep or a hog on the way to the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
And that's where we are now. So this is a new way of life. It requires that we repent of our neglect. We repent of our laziness. We repent of our cowardice. If anybody hearing my voice is ready to do that, Preston can put you in touch with me. You can talk to me personally. You can talk to our founder, David Zuniga. You can get on our website, again, www.tacticalcivics.com. Start a chapter. If you know anybody with a militia, if you're part of a militia, get in touch with me, and I will tell you how to accomplish more of what you want to accomplish than you dreamed was possible. We all need to get together and be self-governing people again.
I agree with that. We got too many people who think they're royalty, and there's no such thing in this nation. We are the government. We are the sovereigns, not those that pretend they are. So it's good to see that there is a plan, and it's an effective plan if we, the people, take this thing serious and do our part. Learn. Everybody out there that's listening, I challenge you, check out the website, www.tacticalcivics.com, and get involved. It's the only way there is to take back our government one county at a time. This is imperative, because otherwise we're going to end up like Australia. And if you've seen the news there lately, it's not very good. I mean, it's very bad, very bad. So that'll have to be the last word. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem, teaming up with tactical civics. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, on Telegram at Civil Defense Radio Channel, MeWe at Civil Defense Radio, and on YouTube, Civil Defense Radio Channel. Okay, so I wish to thank John Lazorek again for being on the show, and to thank you, our friends out there who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.